Welcome, fam. This is MD Fem. We are a group of female physicians from diverse backgrounds who have decided to share our stories with you, our listening audience. We are real, we are honest, and we are candid about topics that affect all of us. We hope that our dialogue will dispel myths, change culture, and rewrite the narrative. Please visit us on Instagram, Facebook, and our website, mdfem.com. If you have questions or a topic you would like us to address, please don't hesitate to reach out to us through our social media, website, or our email. We listen, we care. MD Fem. Morning, we're live. Hi, everybody. This is MD Fem, episode 7, social distancing, but more importantly, we're talking about disparities in healthcare and how it's affecting our current climate right now. I'm on with Dr. Lubna Chowdhury. I'm on with Dr. Candace Wall Bennett and Dr. Akuya Ampadu, and I am Dr. Kristen Statlis. Okay, so excuse me for the glowy look. It's actually bad Wi-Fi, and we're going to continue. All right, so Akuya, you're going to be spearheading this conversation. So talk to us about the disparities in medicine and what the discussion is that's going on right now.
Of course. Hey, everyone. Like Kristen said, I'm Dr. Ampadu. If you are new to this show, I'm an internal medicine physician, specifically hospitalist medicine. So I work mostly in the hospital. I have been seeing COVID patients in various facilities. And one conversation that continues to happen is the fact that a lot of the media has expressed concern that minority and immigrant populations are more, quote unquote, susceptible or have a higher rates of having COVID-19 here within the United States. There's been a lot of discuss about disparities and a hashtag floating around on social media called End the Disparity, which recognizes that this is not something new. You know, we've been talking about disparities in medicine for years, but unfortunately during this pandemic, it has a higher media scale, and thus it's kind of a hot topic button at this point. Seeing a lot of these patients, I have seen them in different races, white, black, males, females. From my personal experience, I've seen a predominance of male patients. I don't know if there is a specific difference regarding sex, but I will say that many of the patients that I have seen who were minorities lived in urban populations, as well as had a kind of fractured socioeconomic issues that also bring a lot of concern when thinking about your risk for infection and specifically your risk for coronavirus. One thing that is of concern is that, you know, they put these stay-at-home orders in place, they put these lockdown orders in place in a lot of these states. Unfortunately, a lot of people cannot social distance. They cannot create boundaries with amongst themselves because they just have nowhere to go. You can think of somewhere like New York, somewhere like Chicago, where you have a large immigrant population, large undocumented population. A lot of these people are, in a sense, hiding by living in hidden apartments, very ramshackle apartments, and thus it's oftentimes several of them in one place. For instance, in New York, Flushing, Queens was a place that was very hard hit in New York. If you're not aware of Flushing, it is a predominantly Asian neighborhood, Chinese and a bit of Korean. Many of the people there are brought to America illegally and have to do sort of odd jobs and kind of sell things just to pay for their trip to America. So a lot of times you'll find them in houses that have been almost cut up into smaller rooms with maybe one bathroom and 8 to 9 individuals living inside. So within Flushing, they actually had a large census of Asian patients as well as Hispanic patients, because we had a lot of Hispanics from places like Ecuador, Honduras, who kind of had the same issue of living with multiple people who are unable to socially distance. So that is a great concern. I do think that COVID has shed light on a socioeconomic issue that we need to talk about. We need to work on once, not even once the epidemic or the pandemic is over. It's something that we need to deal with right now.
Okay, so I mean, like, you know, from my personal experience in dealing with these patients as an ICU physician, I have seen a disproportionate amount of African-Americans affected by this disease. I have seen pregnant females. I have seen men. I've also seen Hispanics, and specifically migrant workers, like you talked about, a lot of those who are like farmers, strawberry field workers, things of that nature. Like if you're living in close quarters, as you said before, these individuals tend to be more susceptible.
Is it a certain age group that you guys are seeing, or is it just all over?
I'm actually seeing like 40 to 60 year old patients.
Okay.
That are real, like you do get the older ones, but so this is the thing that this is another conversation that we'll pick up probably later on in this conversation too. But we're also getting this, I don't want to call it pressure. There is a push basically, you know, to categorize patients COVID-19 or not, right? So you test them if they come back positive. But it doesn't necessarily mean that this patient is ill from it or has died from it. And this is becoming an ongoing debate in the medical community. Just because you're COVID positive, does that explain the symptoms that you have? Because I've had patients who are COVID positive that, you know, I've had to intubate and dialyze, but then they recover quite quickly. That's not a COVID patient. COVID patients stay intubated for quite some time. So, you know, that's, and you get into that whole muddled area of who are we really saying is affected by the illness. So that's a whole nother conversation that has to do with Medicare and reimbursement and blah, blah. And yeah, I like my job. So I'm not gonna touch on that. However, I will say from the people that I've seen, it's 40 to 60 year olds, African-American, Hispanic mostly. The pregnant females really, really like that one really gnaws at me. Because
why do you find that it's pregnant females?
Yeah.
Well, the couple cases that I had were like your last trimester. And these are not, so let me explain something. These are not like, you know, pregnant women in itself also are a population that kind of push out the problems that we have in disparities in medicine. They really do highlight issues in our socioeconomic background and racial background that we're not dealing with as a country. Let's just keep it 100. When Black women come in to an OB ward, they are not dealt with on the same level most times in certain areas as their counterparts. You have all these stories of, oh, they said that they weren't feeling well or blah, blah, blah. And then they have like a clot or they have some type of HELLP syndrome or, you know, so forth. And so that's an ongoing issue that they're trying to resolve now. But my thing is that we're seeing it now with COVID too. These ladies are coming in, they're short of breath. They were already like preeclamptic or they had some other thing going on and here comes the snowball, you know? So, I mean, like anything that dampens the immune system, number one, or puts you at a decreased health state is gonna make you susceptible, right? So these women are already, pregnancy has a couple of different issues. You're fluid overloaded, right? Because your plasma volume goes up by 30 to 50%, depending upon who you are, right? Your hormones change, okay? Yeah. Some of these women have pre-existing conditions they don't even know about. Hypertension starts to come out. Pre-diabetes starts to come out in the form of gestational diabetes. And so all these things are raised up and then they get the COVID. You see what I'm saying? So it's a milieu. And then when they get sick, they get really sick. The ones that I've seen, you know, end up, you know, getting intubated. So, you know, and your number one thing is to take care of baby and then take care of mom, you know? So it's an ongoing issue. I do feel like as a country, we're not addressing the socioeconomic disparity in medicine enough. We have not leveled the playing field. Let's keep it 100. And you're going to continue to see these issues come out more as this pandemic evolves. New York is a perfect example of this, as you said, Aquia, because you have individuals living in close quarters. And I think the first person I actually heard really shout and speak out about it, and other people listen, of course, as a celebrity, was Cardi B, because she was saying that you're sending these people back after you've tested them and said they're positive. back to their homes, but do you know who they live with? They live with their grandparents and their parents and their sisters and brothers. It's like 8 people in an apartment. Do you know what you're sending them back to? And that's the situation that they're not realizing. People don't, everybody can't socially distance. Everybody can't always go into one separate room and have their own bathrooms. That's not the reality for most Americans. And we're not being honest about that. You know, we need to deal with that. I think that's a huge issue. Somebody else can jump in here because I don't want to get
too... I was going to just say that, just like Akuya said, that the populations that are more dense, there is an area in Chicago where it's a lot of South Asians. We call it Divan. And huge numbers of cases there and lots of complications, lots of death. But that's just the same thing like you're saying. It's a lot of immigrants, a lot of people coming from, you know, with their families and they're staying with multiple people or they're not on their feet yet and they're staying at other people's homes and it's just families on top of families and it's just getting hit so hard there.
Exactly. So, I mean, the other issue too is access to medical care, like regular, basic, preventative and, you know, primary care medicine. That is still an ongoing issue in this country. And we have some systems that are in place. At Lubs, you work at a federally qualified health center. That was one of your, you know, stuff that you speak to. Not anymore, but you used to. That's why you changed jobs. So can you speak to that population, to that instance?
Yeah, definitely. It was actually like eye-opening. I mean, I'm really happy out of residency. That was my first job. I worked there a little over 3 years. What we were doing is something that they hadn't had in like decades, maybe, you know, it's the minority population, mostly Hispanic. They live in the northwest suburbs of Chicago, which is an affluent area, but there's pockets, you know, you got to think there's pockets in those areas that is not so affluent. And so we were bringing healthcare in that area versus them having to go 30 miles out to Cook County or any county like care hospital or clinic or something. So what we did was we had a sliding scale fee. So based on what their income was, they would bring in their paper, a certain amount of paperwork. Based on their income, their visit can be anywhere from $30 to anywhere to like $80. Usually more people were on the lower end of like $30. But with that, it was pretty amazing because with that visit, I could do any lab I want and that's it. The $30 is what they're charged. That's it. Mm. So if I felt like they needed this lab or that lab or whatever, I just, you know, it would be piled on, you know, because that's their chance to get that stuff done at a low rate and not have to keep bringing them in for stuff like that. You know, a lot of people were uninsured. So we did a sliding scale for them as well. You know, we did do one-time type of deals where if they didn't have proof of anything, but they needed to be seen, we would still see them at a reduced rate as well. But it was difficult because it's like we're offering them our care and our professional opinion, but then say, hey, we got to send them out to a specialist or they need to get imaging. Now we're trying to work with other places we had a program where we had a grant to do free pap smears and mammograms for women. So the whole time I was there, we were able to do that. You had to qualify for it, but yeah, we were offering free pap smears and mammograms. But say they needed to get an x-ray, we worked with a lot of local radiologists that had their own, you know, clinics separated from a hospital that were kind of private practices to get discounted rates from them to do simple things like x-rays or whatever it is, you know. But you gotta be, when you're in that kind of environment, you have to be very scrappy and you kind of gotta be everything, you know? So if I had a patient and I had some endocrine issue with them, would I send them to an endocrinologist or would I do my diligence and call up or text an endocrinologist I know to say, hey, what do I do in this situation? And let me try to figure it out myself, which is what I did most of the time. But unfortunately you can't do that for everybody and you can't manage that by yourself, like all things, you know, but certain things you would try to do, you know. I had an orthopedic surgeon. He trained me when I was in medical school. I would text him because every Saturday he would have an open clinic where it was walk-in clinic and he would see patients. So I would text him and be like, hey, I'm sending this person. And he's like, tell them to be there at 8 a.m. on Saturday and I'll see them, you know? So you figure out ways to try to help them. I'm not saying everybody did that and maybe other people did more than that, but you try your best. But it's unfortunate the care that they're not given, which they deserve.
Right. Now, Candace, can you speak to your situation as a family practice physician also? Like, how do you deal with these individuals who come in that are not insured or coming from these backgrounds?
So I can't say I see a lot, like Lubna said, with they have this federally, what do you call it, Lubna?
Federally Health Qualified Center.
Right. I can't say I work with a federally health qualified center, but it is a low income area. But most of these people, I can't say is immigrants. So they have like Medicare, Medicaid. So they get qualified for these things. So it's easier for me to, if, as you said, if you have like an ortho case, I can always ship them off for anything specialized. I can ship them off. But it's interesting to hear you guys talk about all the different things with our healthcare system that COVID had increased the light on. And I saw one of the ads from this whole campaign about the healthcare system. And they're saying like U.S. is basically a third world country with like a name brand sign on it. Because it's exactly like... you're describing things that we saw like in Dominica where we were trained. It's like the family care doctor ran the whole thing. It's like you were the surgeon, you were the endocrinologist, you were everything basically. And it's interesting because I see that happening over and over again.
Well, if you think about, I'm sorry, not to cut you off. If you think about some of these individuals, when you start to refer them, and I don't know, Aquia, me and you both worked at Newark Beth Israel when we were in residency, and you had charity care patients there.
Yes.
And that was our system for helping the underserved population. And what you would find, though, is like, you know, because I'm pulmonary critical care, and when we had patients that came in and needed like a sleep study,
yes,
okay, they would go and get the sleep study. But then let's say you have sleep apnea, your AHI is whatever, you need a CPAP machine. Guess what? They're never getting that CPAP machine because it costs money, okay? Somebody has to pay for that, and there you've lost the patient to follow up. You've lost the patient to care. There were so many circumstances where that happened in different specialties depending upon what the patient needed, right? You would prescribe a certain medication. And then, you know, in training, you don't really realize how much that medication costs until the patient comes back to you and says, doc, that medication is too much money. I can't afford that. And they're literally sitting there with a blood pressure that's 180 systolic, and they have taken nothing that you asked them to take because they can't afford it. So you have different programs now that are like available. I mean, I feel like parts of society are trying. We have charity care, we have the federally qualified health centers, we do have patient assistance programs from different corporations that are trying to help, like who make certain medications. I do have to say GoodRx is an app that I use all the time, and it's really good. It's really good for the patients. It gives them really good coupons. It tells them what pharmacy to go to.
Yeah.
And if you don't have it, you should download it. It's GoodRx. It's a yellow and black app. And very useful for the patients. You can get medications at a discounted cost. Walmart has a program for patient assistance also. You know, those things too. Help. Okay, those things help. So there are pharmacies trying to help too. So you have to ask also. You have to ask.
Sam's
now.
Club, Costco, they all do. And you don't even need the membership. Just go with someone that has it and pick up your medicine. Yes.
Nice. Good to know. Like that's part of it. And then just, you know, I feel like we have to listen to our patients too. You know, when your patient comes in, they're telling you their situation. You just have to listen. Yeah. Oh, I live with grandma and grandpa and I am taking care of my sister also. You know, that's an individual that cannot socially distance. Mm-hmm. They cannot stay at home and be safe, right? those individuals are going to have to take care of their grandparents and so forth. So we have to educate them on what they can do. So if you're living in close quarters, here's some of the tips that we're going to try to give you right now. Washing your hands frequently is going to help. Cleaning the surfaces in your home that are high touch. Okay. You can clean them with soapy water, or you can clean them with fanny wipes or whatever you have access to. Okay. It has to have an alcohol base that's greater than 70%, or like a bleach or a soap base. Okay. To clean off the surface. And then in terms of like social distancing with your family, I want to explain masks. Okay. So we started out when we talked about coronavirus initially, and we told you about masks, and I'm going to reiterate, because I know CDC and everybody is saying something different, but I am going to speak pulmonary medicine, okay? You have particulate matter that's a certain size, okay? We classify it as large or fine. It's either 10 or 2.5, okay? That's what we call it. 2.5 is the size that affects your lower airways, gets into your bloodstream, causes ARDS and all these other things in your lungs. That's where coronavirus sits in, okay? The regular surgical mask that everybody wears does not protect you from that, okay? The why you're wearing the mask out in public is because you're preventing people from catching your stuff, not you being prevented from catching theirs. Does that make sense? When you cough, yes, it's acting as a barrier. That's what the mask is doing. When you cough, when you sneeze, the mask is actually helping others, not you, okay? I wanna make that clear. Now, if you have on an N95 mask, it's different. 95 refers to 95% of the particles are blocked. When does that work though? That works when it is fitted properly to your face. So if you have a big face like mine, okay, with chubby cheeks, most of those N95 masks that are small or medium are not going to work. It has to be large, it has to fit snug over the nose and fit straight to the face, okay? It's not working if it's got a gap there. That's not 95, that's zero. That's an N0 mask, okay? Just wanna let you know, I've seen it. I'm seeing it everywhere. I'm going around to different stores and stuff, and I'm like, that's okay.
But this is the opportunity that everybody just wears a surgical mask going out or cover themselves. Would you recommend that if the population did that, we would reduce our risk?
So here's my theory, and I'm going to get in, you know, and anybody can disagree with me here. This is a conversation, okay? As a pulmonologist, I also believe in immunology, okay? Mm-hmm. And I feel like we may be doing a little bit more harm to ourselves wearing masks every day. How do you acquire your immunology as a human being? You get dirty, don't you? You touch things, you breathe things in, your body gets exposed to it, you fight, your immune system gets identified to it, it builds an immunity, there you go, okay? Now, we don't have evidence that you're actually having a what we call a memory immunity or IgG, IgM response to this COVID, the regular way that other things happen. That's the only reason I will say you should wear a mask when you're going out in public. And I'm not saying it's to protect you, it's to protect everybody else. Because a lot of people are positive and have no idea they're positive, they're totally asymptomatic. A poor granny who's shopping at the grocery store, who has little to no immunity, is coming in contact with your germs. So, please, I will say this, if a business has a sign that says, please wear a mask, please wear a mask. Washing your hands is the number one thing I feel like we should do. I still see people washing their hands wrong on the airport. So I travel all the time for locums. I fly, and I've seen this in the airport bathroom, and you're not washing your hands long enough. It's 20 seconds, okay? You're just wetting the coronavirus. And walking away. Just wetting it down. That's not washing your hands, okay?
Just moisturizing it.
Yeah, exactly. I stopped the lady and I was like, I'm so sorry, that's not 20 seconds. Let me show you. We did the whole thing together. I was like, there we go. Good job. 20 seconds, wash it properly, please. I beg you. Anyhow, that's my spiel for the day. But yes, if a business has a sign up and says wear a mask, respect their sign, wear a mask. You don't have to wear a mask in the car now, but if you're by yourself in the car, and I've seen that.
No. Me too. Yeah.
That's enough. But when you're going out to interact in other, because there's states that are open or opening, So yeah. These are the rules that we're talking about. If your state is closed, you should not be going out. You should be staying at home. And even if your state is open, you should not be going out.
Yes.
You should be trying to stay at home as much as you can. But, you know, to each his own.
Leave it at that.
We'll leave that alone. We'll leave that alone. I'm not even going to bring up. I don't know what each state is. So, we're all in different places. I'm currently in Dallas. It's open. Kind of open, but it's open.
Yeah.
You're in Houston. You're open, yeah? And yeah. Pittsburgh is closed?
Closed. So the governor, Governor Wolf, he opened up some states with less density areas. So in Pittsburgh, it's closed. But if you go further up north, like Erie, then it's open. So that's why.
Okay. Is it like less dense population? So he opened.
So the more dense, you close, keep it closed.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Understood. And Aquia, you're in New York?
Yeah.
Okay. And closed. Yeah.
New York is shut down until next week, though.
What's happening next week?
Next week, May 15th, is the day that we're supposed to slowly be reopening. Yeah. For example, nail salons and barbershops by appointment only and a few more areas. So
Can I ask why? I just want to play devil's advocate. Just, I'm going to raise my hand. Okay. Can I ask why barbershops and tattoo parlors and nail salons are considered the first line to open up?
And movie theaters.
Oh, yes, in the movie theaters. Anybody?
Well, I think the problem is, no, they're not ready, but have you seen the unemployment rate recently?
I agree. And the stimulus checks seem to have done.
So I think that's where the push is people who don't have any jobs, and the stimulus check did. Ours basically not doing much is kind of pushing and causing riots and all this to open up.
And I totally understand that, because if you don't, it's going to be a snowball effect, right? You don't have a job, you're not working, you're not making money. And let's say someone in your house gets sick. How are you going to be able to afford care for that patient, or for that person? And here's where the socioeconomic disparity comes back again, I don't know. Some people are also bringing up all these articles and so forth of different areas, different places. I think Sweden, Norway, so forth, countries that did not shut down, but they don't have the infection rate that we have. What is your response to that?
I would first say, do they have the immigrant population that we have?
That's true.
Most places are Europe, where they have maybe universal health care. Do they have issues with people that have, like you said, disparities where they can't even go and get themselves checked for their diabetes and high blood pressure? So they have these comorbidities that already, may decrease their immune system and give them an increased chance for infection. I believe the living situation in some of those areas may be much more ideal than the living situation that several people have here, especially in our urban populations. I don't think you can compare us to somewhere like Sweden.
The thing too. Sweden's quality of life is very different from the U.S.
Exactly.
One, they're living. I think there's how do you say that? Square per inch, basically, a number of people. It's less. You can't compare what's going on there to what's going on in New York. You've got millions of people in New York City.
I guess another question I had, what about places like India? Are they just not reporting the numbers?
So that's another thing that goes back to what I was saying earlier about COVID-19 testing and the reporting. Our system is constructed in such a way that we are now so heightened to it that we're testing everybody. Mm-hmm. And then we're reporting all of those positives. You understand? Yeah. Other countries weren't doing that.
Yeah.
No.
There's a lot of unreported people that they're not reporting that basically recovered and had no serious illness. Let's just be honest. So that's why you're going to see a disproportionate number here also. It's not that we're just, walking around just seeding the earth with this. It's that we're testing more. It's a issue of prevalence, right? It goes back to how we understand studies, medical studies, right? If you look for it more, you're going to find it more.
Exactly.
That's what's happening in the U.S. We're testing it more, therefore we're getting more test positive, therefore we're reporting more test positive, but it's still like 10%. Like it's 1.something million cases reported so far, and it's like, I wanna say it's 20 to 30,000 people that were reported either terminal or severely ill from this or whatever. So the percentage, if you look at it in terms of raw percentage, it's not that many people out of who are infected that are getting very ill, but it still does highlight the disparities we have, you know, and if you start to look at the statistics of who are actually, you know, passing from this illness, it starts to bring out, well, what can we do to help these populations deal with this better, right?
Here are some recommendations to reduce your risk of getting sick with COVID-19 if you have any of the following conditions: asthma, chronic lung disease, diabetes, serious heart conditions, chronic kidney disease that's being treated with dialysis, if you're obese, people that are over the age of 65, people in nursing homes or living in long-term care facilities, immunocompromised individuals, or individuals with liver disease. Number one, continue your medications. We urge you not to change your treatment plan without talking to your doctor. Make sure you have a 2-week supply of your prescription and non-prescription medications. Also, talk to your healthcare provider about whether your vaccinations are up to date, especially people that are older than the age of 65 and those with many underlying conditions and immunocompromised or with significant liver disease. We recommend that you receive the vaccinations against the influenza virus and pneumococcal disease. Do not delay getting emergency care for your underlying condition because of COVID-19. ERs are equipped with contingency infection prevention plans to protect you from getting the virus. Call your healthcare provider if you have any concerns about your condition or if you get sick and think that you may have COVID-19. If you need emergency help, please call 911.
Let's give, I guess, our listeners who have like these conditions kind of like tips. What can you do at home to make sure that you stay well? Like our diabetics, what should they be doing? Our hypertensives, our heart disease patients, what can they be doing at home?
I can start. I must say, take your medications. I see a lot of non-compliance in my field, especially in the urgent care. And I'm like, the medications, your conditions won't improve if you don't take the medications. They won't do the job. So I think that's the number one thing. Before they run out, make sure you might have an appointment, because I know appointments at family medicine is very hard these days because some of the offices are not open. So make sure you have, as you said, at least 2 weeks supply. If you don't, then call ahead so you get everything organized from there. So I think that's the major thing on my end.
I think also eat healthy. This is not your opportunity to like hunker in and eat everything that you want to eat.
I'm going to say something, love. You know, as going through this myself, because I'm keto and I've been struggling. you know, you're at home and you're depressed, so you stress eat. So yes. What can they do to not stress eat? Because I'm listening very keenly.
Wear a mask in the house.
You are very stressed. You're a little different from the average person sitting in their house, but continue, love. Now.
That's true. But how can we not stress eat? The mask is a nice
thing. I mean, okay, so do things that are enjoyable for you, okay? So if you're a social person, people are having Zoom meetings all the time. They're talking to their family all the time. Make a schedule, you know? If you need to be that social person that needs to be talking to someone, make a schedule every day and talk to a couple people a day. Get that what you need in, so you're not sitting and binge watching and just eating, which I'm seeing a lot of people do, and they're telling me their sugars are sky high even though they're taking their medicine, but now we got to up the insulin because they're now we got to compensate for what they're eating. Mm-hmm. And then I get you can't go to the gym, but if you're in a neighborhood where you can walk around and there's not going to be other people around you, then do that, you know? I mean, if it has to be early in the morning where you know nobody's gonna be out, if you're in that neighborhood where everybody goes outside and you're scared of that, go early in the morning or in the evening, you know, and try to get some exercise in. YouTube has tons and tons of free videos for working out in the house. You don't need any equipment. And you could just do that, you know, dedicate 30 to 40 minutes a day at least to do that, because honestly, like what we're seeing right now, which is their, you know, their diabetes, their hypertension, everything is skyrocketing. They're eating canned food, frozen food, salty foods, and that's not needed. You know, you can eat still properly, even though you're getting your groceries once or twice a month, but still choose good options, you know? And if, you know, you're afraid that the fresh produce is going to go bad, get frozen spinach, get frozen vegetables and keep it in the freezer and cook it, you know, but don't make this an excuse to just kind of lounge and eat and that kind of stuff. It's not like, you know, an opportunity to just, it's not vacation mode, pretty much is what I'm saying. Don't be in vacation mode for more than a month, you know, maybe a week or so. Okay, I got you. But now it seems like this is maybe a little bit longer term for some states. Start getting back into it.
But chime into your exercise. Actually, I found this really great app. It's called Fit On. It has different, it's free. And it does have like different kind of workouts. So if you want more like yoga, or you have this, they call it high intensity training, or Pilates. So it has a whole school, and it, I'd ask you, hey, do you want to just work out more or actually tone? So it has a whole different, but I like that it has different instructors too. And it have like, it's a whole different, I guess, balance of, okay. And it reminds you, hey, it's time to work out. I must say I've enjoyed it since this whole thing started, especially can't go to the gym anymore. So I have enjoyed that app.
So also on this whole note, Jump Rope is back and it's great.
Look at that.
Really good cardio. Okay. I've been doing jump rope and I've been doing, this sounds crazy, 5K a day. Because I was eating crazy and I was like, this is insane. I've got to stop. So, and that actually got me out of the eating crazy by getting active again. So, you know, take just like 30, 40 minutes a day and go do something active, get the bloodstream flowing. You know, it's just, it, you don't want to be sedentary in the house all day long. What other, I guess, suggestions can we have for like our hypertensive patients? Like, of course, low salt diet and stay away from the salty snacks and so forth. What about blood pressure checks? Everybody should have their blood pressure cuff at home. Yeah. But what are some of the signs and symptoms? Let's say they don't have a cuff at home. What are some of the signs and symptoms that they should look out for, that their blood pressure is too high or something is wrong?
Yeah. So recently, I mean, what I hear from a lot of patients is that they get a sense of when they feel like their blood pressure is high. So either they get a headache that won't go away, they feel pressure in their like eyes, their vision, not necessarily their vision goes, but their vision changes a little bit, or they just feel like their body is, you know, kind of elevated is what they kind of say. But it's like where you feel the pressure, you know, you feel like your heart rate's a little bit higher, your head's a little bit fuller. And so I don't tell patients, some people are going a little bit on the opposite extreme where they're checking their blood pressures like 5 times a day. And like freaking out if there's one like high, you know, don't do that. Once or twice a week, that's great. But if you don't feel good, then check it, you know, obviously. But don't get too hyperactive. Then you're just creating another issue where you're, you know, you're like, oh my God. And literally you're calling your doctor and giving every single, not only just daily blood pressures, but like literally every hour blood pressures. That's not me.
Oh, wow. Well, okay. So another suggestion I'm going to say is drink water, drink water, drink water.
Yes.
Drink water. Stay away from the juices and the concentrated things. Yeah. Drink water. That is my number one suggestion to you. You actually will feel a whole lot better. So, I mean, like everybody likes a little sweet something now and then, but your basis fluid should be water. Okay. You should be getting 8 glasses a day. Yeah.
If your urine is not like water, you're not drinking enough. If there's even a tint of yellow, that's not enough water. You need to make it your goal every day by like 3 o'clock, your urine is clear. If it is not, you need to drink a ton more water.
Right. The exception, of course, would be my heart disease patients. You know, you're on Lasix. Bam.
I know.
You're fluid
exactly.
restricted. I just want to say, I know somebody out there's going to do this, so let me just
somebody's say it out clearly. There.
My heart disease patients, I didn't say that to you. I just want to make that clear. I said water.
You said that.
Drink water. But you heart disease patients, you're fluid restricted. Stop that. You got Lasix on. Okay, let's go. Eat your bananas. All right. I'd be like, you'd be surprised some of the things I see in the ICU, and I go, well, why are the labs all out of whack? And it's like a hypertensive patient, or I had a diabetic patient that went on a keto diet, and I said, what are you doing? You have to talk to your doctors before you start any diet or exercise program if you have any of these illnesses. Please, please, please. Okay? We can prevent these situations and circumstances if we talk to someone. Thank you. Okay. All right. What about, our mental health patients in this time, you know, our patients who have depression or bipolar or different circumstances, what can they do at home? I know we have to take our medications, but you know, can we telemed the therapist? How's that working out? Does anybody know?
And honestly, Kristen, it's people that never had depression before are having depression now. So it's not just the people with the history of mental illness, but we're seeing a lot in our telehealth that people that have new onset depression and, you know, it's rapidly progressing for them, you know? So one app that I love, I talk about it all the time, is the Calm app. You know, it has different things. It has meditation. It has other things like, you know, it's a mindfulness app. So it could be quick and it could be like a little bit longer, but I tell my patients to download that app and the free version of it.
Okay. Okay. Anyone else? Any suggestions for our folks who are going through some type of depression or?
Yeah. Kind of piggybacking off of what she was saying, if you are an insured individual, they will look at your insurance card. There's a number on the back or on the website. You may be able to get some teleservices. Also, if you are a working individual, your job may also be providing teleservices for mental health. A lot of jobs have been ramping up counseling, providing maybe 3 sessions for free and things of that nature. Also, I believe in New York, I don't know if it's just for New York, but I believe that they have a mental health phone number in place, and maybe we could put that in the show notes for people who are dealing with anxiety, depression. There's a number, a hotline. I'll send that over to you.
And that okay.
I think it goes along with the, I'm pretty sure you're talking about it, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. I think so. In all of US, they have different local crisis centers in every single state. Here it's called the crisis center. Look it up, but I'm pretty sure it's called the crisis services. So they have they literally have different local centers all around the US. So there's a phone number that for the National Suicide Hotline. And then from there, they hook you up with different local centers for crisis center.
So I found the website. It was nycwell.cityofnewyork.us. So you can actually text, call, or just chat on their website. All 3 options show up, text, call, or chat. So, you know, you could do it. And it's 24/7, it says.
Okay. So in the video, we will make sure that we kind of put these contacts in so that you guys can have it. And we'll try to make it available on mdfem.com also. You know, for those who are feeling depressed or sad or not your usual self, I can't stress enough, just piggybacking off of what my sister just here said, is, you know, you talk to someone. Therapy, there are a lot of therapy options out there. We're going to give you some resources, but I've also seen a couple of these online apps through Instagram and so forth, like BetterHelp and all these other companies that are offering free hour sessions for like the first session or whatever is like free, or you can call them if it's COVID-19 related, and they're giving away some of this time also. So you don't have to pay anything. So we're gonna give you some of those links also, but you do need to talk to somebody, okay? And you know, for those of you who are spiritual, a lot of these churches and so forth are having online church. You don't have to go in. You can Zoom, Skype, whatever medium that they're using. And that's what I've been doing, you know, getting my clap on in the hotel room and then going to work. So, okay. Well, we thank you for joining us. It's always our pleasure. We want you to stay healthy and stay safe and stay home and wash your hands and, you know, follow the recommendations of the neighborhood or the state that you're living in. And of course, you can always reach out to MDFem at mdfem@gmail.com. Our website's www.mdfem.com, and that's Fem, F-E-M-E. And thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
MDFem, thank you for tuning in to our podcast and vlog. We are real, we are honest, and we are candid about the topics that affect all of us. We hope that our dialogue will dispel myths, change culture, and rewrite the narrative. Please visit us on Instagram and Facebook and our website, mdfem.com. If you have questions or a topic you would like us to address, please don't hesitate to reach out to us through our social media, website, and email. We listen, we care. MDFem.